copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
The topic for this morning is the first session in counseling. And obviously the first session in counseling is very important, paramount importance. It is the time when the foundations of the relationship, of a good therapeutic process, are laid. From the beginning, I would like to say that the main goal in the first session is creating the right rapport, the right atmosphere. The relationship is the most therapeutic tool from a human viewpoint. Of course, we always trust the supernatural divine resources that we have, the Holy Spirit, the Word of God, etc., that we'll be referring to. But from a human viewpoint, the relationship with the counselor is in itself therapeutic. Even if you do nothing else, the fact that you provide a relationship is highly therapeutic. This is why we have to be carefully working out the details, the right atmosphere of the relationship. When I was specializing in psychiatry and I had to do a lot of psychotherapy, by that time there were about 175 schools of psychotherapy. That was in the early 80s. By now, I think there are about 1,700 schools of psychotherapy. So I felt lost in the jungle. And I remember my mentor, Professor Monty Barker, a fine Christian psychiatrist, made me read a book written by specialist Jerome Frank. And the whole thesis of the book was, forget about names and techniques. Forget about names and techniques. The most therapeutic tool, the most important instrument in therapy, and that applies equally to counseling, is the relationship. So don't worry too much about studying counseling, but worry a lot about being a good relational counselor. Relationship is paramount in all the counseling process. Relationship contains most of the therapeutic forces. This is something we'll be seeing time and again during this week. So once we've said this, there are three features that are important in this relationship that should be clear from the beginning, from the very first session. The first one is warmth. We'll be considering each one of them. Warmth, trust, and third, understanding. These are the key features of the relationship. A therapeutic, a counseling relationship. So this would be the framework, the background. These three pillars will determine a relationship, a good relationship, where thoughts, feelings, and reactions will be expressed freely and lead to the fulfillment of the therapeutic goals. So this was the introduction. Never forget that if you want to be a good counselor, the most important thing is a good relationship with the counselee. A relationship whose hallmark is this threefold pillar. Now, let's start with the first question. Our first point is, how shall we start? How shall we start? In your outline, you've seen the question, what can I do for you? I would like to call your attention to the fact that the very first words both the counselee and ourselves, the counselor, say are crucial, are vital, are extremely important. So let's start with ourselves. What is the first question we will ask? I always will always remember a girl came to me and she was very angry with a psychiatrist working in the national health system. Psychiatrists working in the national health system have very short time to be with patients and they rush, they go very quickly. And the psychiatrist, it was the first interview, and the psychiatrist, without looking at her eyes, just asked her, what's happening to you? What's happening? What happens? And she just said nothing, stood up, and left. Why do you think that this question is not appropriate? Could you tell me?
Because he needs to figure out.
Because?
He needs to figure out what's happening. She's giving the facts and he is probably taking the conclusion.
Okay.
There's no trust yet. Mm-hmm. To tell the experts what's happening.
Okay. The three, four words we use in the very first question set the tone. A question I like to ask is, how can I help you? In which ways can I help you? Could you tell me in which ways can I help you? Now, I would like you to divide in groups of three or four and think of three questions, three opening questions from the counselor that you think are appropriate, and three questions which are wrong and don't set the right tone. Is my question clear?
Yes.
So let's work on the opening question, because the opening question, the first five, six words, set the tone like in a symphony. Some feedback. Let's start with the negative. Some negative questions. Could you stand up and speak up, please, so that I don't need to repeat that back there.
We find it much easier to think of negative.
Yes, go ahead.
We thought one very bad one would be something like, what's wrong with you? What's your problem? Something like that.
Very good. These are two frequent mistakes that an inexperienced counselor usually makes. What's the problem? The problem, if you focus on the problem, is that you are creating a problem. So it sounds very negative. You should not ask what's the problem. There are much better questions. The other one was what's wrong with you? Again, notice the emphasis on the negative. Wrong. Problem, wrong. These are words we do not want to include. We want to focus from the beginning in the positive. Who else? Yes.
So we are older women with husbands in ministry, and so we would say, does your husband know you're here? Are you obeying him?
Well, certainly, if this is the first question, this is very scary. Yes.
We were more creative. We said, have you already paid for the session online? Or just another one. I think you are sexting. Am I wrong?
You've done a good exercise. Okay, more examples. Yes.
Oh, not you again.
That sounds unthinkable, unbelievable, but these things happen.
Yeah,
I've been working in psychiatry for many years, and these sort of sentences are sometimes used. So we should certainly avoid them. One or two more? Yes. Yes.
Or it's raining outside, you look out, the client is there and say, hey, it's raining, why did you go home?
Okay, so notice that it's very important to avoid both the negative, problem, wrong, etc., and also to sound aggressive. We don't want to sound aggressive if we want to create an atmosphere of warmth. So as much as possible, avoid wrong connotations and aggressive language, because that makes the counselee close. Okay, now about the positive, let's have some examples. Is this more difficult?
What brings you here?
That's a good question. What brings you here? This is a neutral question. Very neutral. It's important that our questions are as neutral as possible. We are not conveying from the beginning messages. We are conveying attitudes. Okay? We're not conveying messages, but attitudes. More.
What can I do for you?
That's a good question. This is my favorite one, actually. What can I do for you? What can I do for you? What's the good point of this question? What are the good elements in this question? This question has at least two or three ingredients which are very good. What can I do for you? That's an open question. You make yourself available?
I always say I'm here for you.
I'm here for you?
Love, interest, and love.
Exactly. You are conveying at the same time warmth and eventually understanding. So this is a very good question. More.
Can I get you any coffee, tea, water? I'm hospitable.
Okay. That helps the person arrive mentally. Usually, there are two movements. The counselee arrives physically, geographically, but sometimes there is a gap between their arrival, physical arrival, geographical arrival to the room, and their mental arrival. So it's important to make them, help them get to the place also emotionally. And that could be a good question, a relaxing question. Okay? That's a relaxing question. It conveys an attitude that helps to relax. More.
What bothers you? What bothers you?
What do you think about this? What bothers you? What do you think about this question? The emphasis is on? You're very good pupils. You're learning quickly. So I think I would not use this one because the word bothering conveys
irritation.
It's not neutral, okay? It's not a neutral word.
It's not good to put them down also because it's...
Okay.
The only issue is that in English, this is true, but it's possible in different languages, culturally, that's very acceptable.
Okay. So here we have the linguistic...
Because we have different many...
Cultural and linguistic differences. So sorry about that. I beg your pardon.
I would like to ask, how are you feeling today? I'm very conscious.
Okay.
Tell me something about you.
Tell me something about you. Yes?
I have a question. Would you ask that, when would you say it was a good use of our time to talk today?
What would you say?
That it's a question to you that I don't know that whether we should ask this question. The question is this. When would you say it was a good use of our time to talk today?
What do you think?
Good use of our time.
Maybe too complex.
I wouldn't use this. I don't think. The question should be non-directive, neutral. And if we have to convey any message, it should be a message of warm attitudes. Okay, final one, and we move again.
The question I use is, what is most important for you at this moment? And my group told me maybe it's better to say, help me to understand what is most important for you.
That's a good question, although I think I would keep that for the second level. Because we will be referring to this later when we define the goals, defining the therapeutic goals. So I would not use this as an opening question, but I would include certainly in the first interview, but later on. You will notice that a moment comes when we define the therapeutic goals. So I would postpone it for a little while, still in the first interview. Okay, so I think by now we have a good selection of opening questions from our part. But also the very first sentence, the very first words of the counselee are critically important. Usually the first sentence is a summary. First one or two sentences are a summary of the motivation, the needs, and the goals the counselee has in mind. I usually write literally the two or three first sentences the counselee mentions, because they are a reference point. This is how and where we started. This was your situation when we started. Then, as the counseling process goes on, we can compare, where are we now? So these two or three opening sentences from the counselee are very, very important. And even if you start writing down, which perhaps you are not used to doing it so soon in the interview, it's important at least that you remember them. remember them, and then afterwards write them down, because they will be our reference point. And they are a summary of the motivation and probably the purpose of the counselee. Is it clear so far?
Yes.
Can we start the counseling process? Okay. So this was the first point in your outline. What can I do for you? Pitfalls to avoid, some questions which are not helpful to start with, and words that help, some questions which are indeed helpful. Now, the second point, you will see it has to do with understanding. I feel that you understand me. By the end of the session, as we said, the purpose is to establish a good rapport, is the main goal of the first session. Nothing else is more important. The priority is establishing a good rapport. In this sense, warmth and empathy, setting an atmosphere of trust, are very important. How do we create an atmosphere of warmth and trust? What tools do we have? The most important tool we have is listening. Listening. Listening is probably one of the three most important tools we have in counseling. Along the week, we'll be considering two other tools. Listening. Listening carefully. Listening attentively. Listening without being in haste. Now, I would like you to work again in these groups and ask you a simple but very important question. Why do people listen so badly, even counselors? Why are we so bad listeners? What makes us bad listeners? What are the pitfalls? Why, if we know that listening is so important, why don't we listen carefully, attentively, etc.? Why we are not good listeners? Some answers. Again, please, if you could speak up loudly.
Yeah, we have to take them a place which is quiet and not to interrupt them when they are telling us what is in their heart they want discussed, and give the full attention what they are speaking, and not to cut and say, let us talk to this, and let them tell the full story.
Mm-hmm. We have to let them explain the full story. But why is it difficult for us? Why do we interrupt? Or why don't we listen well?
I listen to my friends and I find quickly catch some point. We know the answer, and we are not patient. We try to find solution very quickly, and we don't have time to listen. And the last one, we don't want to know the deeper of the problem.
We'll go much deeper on this point next Tuesday. As soon as the counselee starts sharing something, our brain automatically starts working on the...
That's
wrong. Don't do that. You are called to listen, at least in the beginning. Don't do that. This is the first mistake, the most frequent mistake a non-professional counselor makes. This is why I wanted to mention it from the very beginning. Don't start thinking of the answer or the solution. The word solution is not in the Bible anywhere.
What happens when their mobile is ringing?
There will be time, as we will consider later on, or on Tuesday, there will be time to think of ways out to the problem, not solutions, ways out. But for the time being, just listen. You are called to be a good listener. If you are able to provide a warm relationship and to listen carefully, you are a super counselor. You are a great counselor. You have done your work wonderfully, efficiently. You hit the mark if you fulfill these two purposes. Warmth, relationship, warm relationship, and good listening. I cannot emphasize more this point. Any other reason why we are so bad listeners?
We don't truly care.
Sorry?
We don't truly care what they want to say.
Uh-huh. We don't hear.
Care.
Or we don't care what they say. This is a lack of empathy, isn't it? A lack of empathy. Yeah, we're not empathic enough.
We said that that was a good point, that it's a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy, like, to be present, like, stop in the rush day. And it's also a lot of energy to find out which is the best way for the other person, like, how could we help?
That's a good point. Listening is not something passive. Listening is an active exercise. You hear with your ears, but you listen with your eyes. Okay? You hear with your ears, but you listen with your eyes. More on that on Tuesday. We'll talk more on that on Tuesday. One last contribution, because, or two more, three more, and then we finish. Otherwise, on Tuesday, we'll have nothing to say. Yes?
It's professional counselors, for example, they maybe have fear, only listen, because people paid, and what, I listen, I need to give advice. Fear.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by fear. What?
That go to, for example, to listen my advice, if something think, and this counselor, and they listen and where advices. So maybe counselors.
They only. Yeah. We'll talk more on that on Tuesday. But listening is in itself very therapeutic, because it has a mirror effect. Mm-hmm. When you speak and you are listened, you are receiving many answers. This is a mirror effect, but we'll talk more on that on Tuesday. So if the person says it's a waste of money and time, go to someone who just listens, it means that that person has not understood the real value of sharing and being listened. When you share something, this is a very interesting mechanism that neuroscience has proved, has demonstrated. When you share something, there is a kind of reordering your neuronal structures. So cognitively, many things happen when you share something. The mere fact of talking about something, about an event, creates here a very fascinating process of reorganization of your neurological material. We'll go more on that on Tuesday. This is one of the most fascinating discoveries of neurosciences in the last 15, 20 years. So listening and sharing are in themselves therapeutic. One last contribution. Yes?
I think we can be also disturbed by our own problems, private problems.
In psychoanalysis, we call this projection. Projection. We project. We project our own problems, our fantasies. Keep the question or keep the contribution for Tuesday, okay? because we'll go back to this, to that point again. Okay, let's devote the last minutes to, especially to point three. But before that, still in point two, notice that listening a lot helps a lot. It helps the person feel understood. When the session gets to an end and the person says, "Thank you, I feel you understood me, I felt understood," this is one of the best comments that the counselee can tell. But don't feel discouraged if the person says, "You don't understand me." Because very often, the person goes for counseling not to hear ways out, but they want to get support for their views or projects or ideas. And if these projects or ideas or behaviors are morally wrong, and the counselor, we are talking about pastoral counseling, so you can be somehow directive. If this is wrong and you do not give support, the answer will be, "You do not understand me." Which translated means, "I feel that you are telling me you are not right. You are not right." So don't feel discouraged if they tell you, "You don't understand me." Let's move to point three. What is happening to me? Now, if possible, in the first interview, we should try to have an overall view, a rough portrait of the problem, of the situation. So we should be defining the basic needs or problems. I would just mention a classification I use. This is just my personal one. You could make your own. This is very subjective. It's not. This is not the DSM-5, the official classification. I find it helpful and useful. I find it helpful to divide the main problems and needs in four groups. First, those that are related with our identity. Who am I? This has to do with all our self-concept, self-image, self-esteem, but not in the modern sense of self-esteem culture, but in the really biblical sense. Feeling loved by God, feeling loved by people, feelings of superiority, inferiority, all that has to do with our identity problems. The strong and the weak. Feeling strong, feeling weak. All that has to do with the thorns in our life that affect our image and our identity. Identity. Of course, these categories can mix. Secondly, all that has to do with emotions. We call them emotional problems. Emotional problems. Here we would include, of course, depression, anxiety, loneliness, etc. Very often they are related. They make a cluster, because when you have identity problems, they affect your emotions. So it's not isolated compartments. Thirdly, problems that have to do primarily, basically, at least problem number one has to do with relationships. Relationship problems, very, very often. This happens very often. Many people come to us for help because they have relationship problems. And finally, what I call, so this would be how we relate to others. How we relate. This has to do with how we feel, the emotions, our feelings, our relationships. This has to do with who we are. And finally, what we could call, I like to call, ethical problems, moral problems, how we live, have to do with our behavior, ethical. How we live, have to do with our lifestyle. Certainly here, we are talking about pastoral counseling, so here, anything related with sin should be included. For me, I find it helpful from the very beginning to have a clear idea what is the primary problem. Because the primary problem will set the target. The primary problem will set the target. It will help us not to get diffused, rambling, walking around. So if possible, you should try in the first interview to define the primary problem. Identity, emotions, relationships, or behavior. I find it helpful. From that point onwards, we set the therapeutic goals. We only have 5 minutes and we are in point three. But we have 2 more days, or 3 more days. So on Tuesday, I will be finishing all the rest. So there is no problem. I thought it was important. We will continue with the first interview on Tuesday with all the therapeutic goals, etc. But I think it's good to give place for questions. So do you have any questions or contributions to what we have been considering so far in the session today? The opening questions, the main goal, which is setting a relationship, and all this classification to define the primary problem. Does that sound clear to you? Is it helpful? Is it?
Yes.
Oh, you relieve me. Okay, questions.
I'm just in a very practical sense, because oftentimes you are just meeting with someone, coffee, and suddenly they go into problems. So is there a good way to be able to say, you know, this is really great, I don't have time today. Are there some suggestions you have how to say, can we set up 2 hours that we can talk about it?
That's a very good question. Very important. Setting a professional background, establishing a professional setting is very important. Even if you are not professional counselors, you are doing pastoral counseling, and pastoral counseling is not something you should be doing at a restaurant or in a very casual way. The more casual your counseling is, the more risky it is. It has risks.
We have some.
Okay. For example, I would never do, even if a non-professional setting, I would not do counseling if it's not in a more structured setting. I think there needs to be a minimum professional setting, even if you are not getting money for it, if you are not paid. Otherwise, there are risks.
Practically, what does that mean? private room at your house, how long time, or someone else's house, and at when do you say, oh, I'm really sorry, we've been 1.5 hours and I really need to go in 10 minutes?
I would say the topic, the question you are asking me is so important that I think it deserves that we meet on purpose at a certain place and talk about that. I put the emphasis on the value, on the importance of the question they ask me. I find myself in this situation hundreds of times when I go to lecture, and people come to me, and they start asking questions which are really relevant, and from the answer I give, their whole life may change from one direction to another, and then you feel overwhelmed. And what I usually tell them is, if you really want some orientation, some counseling on that, we need to devote more time to this by any means we can, by Skype, by email, or trying to meet, or whatever. But I think you should avoid casual counseling. Mm. Casual counseling is tricky. And it's not only a matter of male-female casual counseling. This is very obvious, and you should never do it. This is absolutely forbidden. Casual counseling in different sexes. This is the highway towards problems. Problems are guaranteed, because there is a normal reaction in counseling, which is called transference. Are you familiar with the word transference? Transference is the psychoanalytic term for the feelings we project towards the counselor. These feelings sometimes are negative. We hate the counselor. But most of the times are positive. And when the transference is positive, then the counselee mixes up everything and he or she feels that she or he is in love with the counselor. When this is not real falling in love, it's what we call transference. Now, in a setup, in a professional background, and when I say professional, I don't mean pet background, this is much more difficult and it's much easier to control. Perhaps Ed or Yelena would like to add something to this point, and then we close. Ed?
It is very hard sometimes to know what the real issue of... Do I need
to...
Yes, thank you. Sometimes when somebody comes for the first time and you meet the person for the first time, it's very important to know what their primal problem is. But to know that at first session, it's sometimes hard, and we see their secondary problem. we see something else that is on a surface. So it's maybe going to take time, and you need to be patient with yourself. But it is all very important, as Pablo mentioned, to know what we are working here on, and so that we are not going to be everywhere. But that happens in a first session, and I'm sure Pablo is going to talk about that. Sometimes
yes.
He doesn't.
We'll certainly be dealing much more on this point on Tuesday. We are in point three, and there are still the second part of point three and point four. So it's absolutely vital that the first session has a very limited goal. And the goal is setting a good rapport, a good relationship. Defining the problem will come sometimes little by little. Even if I am a professional psychiatrist, sometimes I'm not able to see the real problem till the third or fourth session. Because people have a tendency to hide masks. They use masks. And we often find masked problems. Then the real problem lies behind other secondary problems. But we'll come back to that later on. Mm-hmm.